So, today I had a bit of an epiphany. It's been very, very hard the last little while to come up with episodes. Cause the aim of the show is to talk about, you know, what's going on in the world and what's going on in the news and what's been talked about on social media. And it's been really the same stuff week in and week out, talking about the pandemic and talking about Black Lives Matter with the recent class action lawsuit put forward against the Canadian Hockey League. More stuff about abuse taking place in sports culture and all things that I've talked about and people more successful and smarter than me have talked about. And to add on top of that, I've had a lot going on in my personal life. Nothing bad, but some things that I've been working on for a very long time and some things that I've been doing. Some long-term goals finally reaching their pinnacle, coming to fruition. And today, you know, I was out for a walk. It's currently Sunday, June 21st, Father's Day. So after a long day helping my dad with a few things around the house, I went for a walk, trying to rack my brain to figure out something to talk to you about with you all here for the next 20 minutes. And I was listening to a podcast by, as I normally do when I walk, Radiolab. And it was an old episode that they were rebroadcasting about posting rules on Facebook and what can be posted on Facebook. For anybody that's been watching the news recently, especially the American news, knows that there's been a lot of uproar around Facebook and its policy around Donald Trump, the things that he says. So with that, I thought it'd be great to talk about the importance of platforms. Deplatforming is something that's been talked about a lot with the Black Lives Matter movement and people having old tweets and things brought up and things that they say all the time and people complaining. Anybody that knows Winnipeg media personalities might know DJ Blitz. I know him as Dan. He's a longtime friend of mine. We go all the way back to when we were, you know, 4 years old playing soccer together. And, you know, people talking to him saying, hey, you need to use your platform to speak out. And then when he does speak out, people attacking him for, you know, doing it for clicks. He mentioned, like, you can't win no matter what you do. And that's part of the reason why I didn't say anything. I didn't think my platform was big enough. That's why the last episode that played was a series of quotes and excerpts from speeches by Martin Luther King. But I do want to talk about platforms and the importance of capital to discussion. If you go back, you listen to the episode on discourse. I've talked about this before. I want to talk a little bit more about that issue, why it's important to have people speak out, especially people with platforms speak out, and the opposite of that, when it can be dangerous to have those people speak out. So what really brought me to this discussion, I was sitting there thinking, okay, what kind of platform do I have? What makes what I say so important? And I just realized that last week I defended my master's thesis. The last month, honestly, has been devoted to getting that ready to be defended and submitted so I can finish my master's degree. And I defended my thesis last week on, it'd be a week tomorrow. And now, for the rest of my life, after my last name, will be two letters. M-A. And that confers a lot of power through capital. And I'm not talking about money, because completing my master's degree didn't give me much aside from a piece of paper and some credentials to use when I'm looking for work. It's a little bit different. It's a different type of capital. Now, to get the discussion of anything academic out of the way, as I bring up all the time, being a scholar from this school of thought, the work of Pierre Bourdieu, the idea of habitus and field. So you have a field, it's the world you operate in, whether it's your job, it's your community, it's your country, it's your family, Your field is a particular area of life where you operate. And you operate in multiple fields at the same time. Sometimes there's overlap. Sometimes they are distinct from one another. There is the master field or the central field, the one that kind of usurps all. If you think of labeling theory, it's your primary label. It's the one thing that you are known most for. People that say, I am a police officer. That's a master label. It confers a lot about you just by the title. I am a professor. That confers a lot about you based on that label, that title that you are given. And to be a person who has a master's degree, who is in the top 1% of education in the world, if you think about all the people in the world, the 7 or 8 billion of us, or trillion of us, however many there are, how the number of people there are, 1% of that group has greater than a bachelor's degree. One degree. And that gets you, you know, one extra piece of paper gets you into the top 1%. I'm in the top 1% with people like Stephen Hawking, people with PhDs and multiple degrees, and people who are much, 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 much smarter and more impressive than I am. And I will say that with all of the reverence in the world. I love that there are smarter people than me out there. That means I can keep learning. So the importance of having this type of capital, and to go back to Bourdieu, it's what he deems cultural capital. We've talked about social capital a lot in previous episodes. Obviously, fiscal capital comes up here and there, but cultural capital is the one really important thing. And if you take anything away from this, it is cultural capital. Cultural capital has an impact on your habitus, which is your day-to-day operation, the way that you live your life and the way you operate within a field. It's the way that you walk and talk when you're at work, when you're with your family, when you're with your friends, when you are at a sporting event, when you are living your day-to-day life in this culture. That habitus is what makes you successful, because it is the set of behaviors and knowledge that helps you operate within a field. Cultural capital has to do with positioning within that field and power within that field. Cultural capital, as the name implies, has a cultural dimension. It comes from the culture of whatever field or subgroup that culture is derived from. So, to think of just kind of a general broad Canadian field, or the culture of Canada, the Western world, having a master's degree, having that piece of paper that took me 7 years to get, almost 8 years to get, has a certain degree of clout to it, if you want to use that term. It has a certain degree of power and influence and importance to it. Having that confers position, it confers knowledge, it confers that I have a particular set of skills, I have a particular knowledge, I am particularly educated. It basically points to me as a person who should be listened to because I have a master's degree, because I'm, quote-unquote, a very smart person. I have the best words, to use a very bad quote. Maybe I'll delete that. But what this confers to people is that it makes my position within a field more superior. And I use superior in a very light way. This is not like any dynamic of power where I can exert control over human beings. It's just like half a tiny ladder rung is just in the day-to-day interactions, or if, you know, just to talk about Foucault, it's the day-to-day, the interactions. Every interaction, every relationship is a power struggle. It is the giving and taking, the master and learner relationship of every power dynamic, every relationship, every interaction. So having being a particularly educated confers importance to what I say and what I do and the ideas that I have, because having a degree means people think I know something that they don't. I do know things that they don't, but they know things that I don't. You know? And there are things that I know that people don't, that have nothing to do with my education. I had a conversation with my girlfriend last week, and I was talking about dividends from stocks in my investment portfolio, and she had no idea what a dividend was. I learned dividends from my dad. That's not something my education got me. That's just something that I got from a personal relationship. Now I'm rambling. So the importance of platform with everything that comes with it. To have a platform is to have a certain degree of power within and position within a field, within a subgroup, within a subculture, within a broader culture. The Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, due to his position as Prime Minister, to go back to the discussion of discourse, has the ability to strongly influence the discourse and the hegemony of the Canadian people. He is seen as the most powerful person in this nation. He leads this nation. He was elected to lead this nation. So the things that he says and the policy directions and directives that he sets and the values that he portrays are uniquely Canadian, not for any reason that Justin Trudeau is the most Canadian of Canadians. It's because he's our Prime Minister. He's the face of this country on an international stage. So what he says has importance. It has meaning. The way that we've responded to COVID-19 has been determined for a very large degree at a federal level, just with the power that Justin Trudeau has in day-to-day life to say, hey, you should do this. These places should be closed. We're going to lay down these directives that provinces should be closed. Even though he's left a lot of power up to the premiers of the provinces, I don't want to say that Justin Trudeau's ruling Canada with an iron fist, but he has been able to set some standards. Everyone talks about the importance of what Donald Trump says. Everyone talks about the importance of what Justin Trudeau says. Everybody knows what they say, and everyone talks about what they say because they are important people to these nations, to the international community. So, the words that they say reach more ears, reach more eyes, can impact more people just by knowing what was said. You know, Joe Schmo down the street with 4 Twitter followers can reach 4 people. But Justin Trudeau can reach millions. So when somebody with a platform, say a YouTuber, say a social media personality, a TikTok content creator, a journalist, a celebrity, goes on and starts spewing hate. I'm thinking of the recent deleted tweets by Bryan Adams, where he was making some racial comments about the Chinese and had some very choice words about the meat markets. And the problem with that, aside from those words being racist and those thoughts being racist, were that Bryan Adams is a celebrity. He's a Canadian icon with millions of followers. Theo Fleury is a Canadian icon. So when he says things, people listen, for better or for worse. So those things become part of the discussion. Whether or not people agree, those things are being brought up. My girlfriend is currently at the lake with her family, and they were discussing the Bryan Adams tweets. None of them agree, really, with what Bryan Adams said, but it was part of their discussion. They were talking about it. Those words had reached them, and they were bringing it into the discourse that they were having about these issues. That's what happens when you have a platform. If it was Randy the Anarchist saying this on a street corner, that wouldn't have reached them. So why are platforms important? Platforms are important because of that capital, because of that cultural capital, and that ability to reach people, that ability to sound important based off of your Twitter followers, based off your status as a celebrity, based off of a whole lot of different things. To be somebody like that, to have that type of clout or that influence, means that your ideas reach more people and have a greater impact on driving discussion and the discourse and the greater hegemony of whatever group you're a part of. Now, we've seen good things come from this. We've seen anybody that knows any about YouTube culture knows about Mr. Beast, who is, I don't watch any of his videos, but he's done a great amount of work to spread ideas about philanthropy, planting trees, and donating. Shroud, who is a professional gamer, does this as well, donating the vast amounts of money that he has to random people for just no reason, really. He hears their story and he's like, I like you. I'm going to give you $1,000. And then that sends his community to say, hey, maybe we should do this too. I should give within my means, but I should, you know, help people out. And that creates a community. That creates ideas and positive beliefs about, you know, supporting one another in times of need. That is platforms being used right. But platforms can also be used for ill. I'm thinking specifically about, I'm not going to name names because I don't want to draw up any crazy controversies, but there are individuals out there who are using their platforms for harm, for ill. Whether they believe it or not, whether they are doing it intentionally or not, the ideas that they relay are very, very harmful because they are not checked. They are not stopped. They are not challenged by anybody with any reasonable ability to refute them. A discussion really often comes up about Joe Rogan, who I have no qualms with. I think he's a great analyst for the UFC. He has some very interesting people on his podcast. I love when he has hunters on there. I love when he has UFC fighters on there because, you know, you get to listen and learn about what they say and what their lives are like, and they're just kind of interesting people. But sometimes he has individuals on there who say a lot without saying anything. When he has somebody like Alex Jones on there, Alex Jones's ideas, because he's been quote-unquote deplatformed by Facebook and YouTube and a whole bunch of other places, his reach has been limited. But when he goes on Joe Rogan's podcast, who has a reasonable degree of influence online and in broader communities, his ideas get broadcasted out. Somebody like, thinkers like Tim Pool, or even Neil deGrasse Tyson, or Jordan Peterson when he was on there, even though Joe has said he's not going to have people like Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson on really anymore. When they talk and talk and talk and talk, and there are people, other people, they're talking, the conspiracy theorists, and there are people that talk and talk and talk and talk, and he does not have the wherewithal or the ability to check any of the things that they say. Because he's not there to fact-check them. He's there to give them an ability to say their piece. He'll push here and there. He's done a lot better job at pushing here and there, but still, there are issues with that. You know, not knowing when to call somebody out for something that is blatantly and objectively wrong, or could be wrong. And that allows those individuals to have their ideas spread, because they're not being challenged. Something that has been talked often a lot about with respect to YouTube and things like that is it allows individuals to speak, as I'm doing right now, speak for 20, 30 minutes on end, you know, write a nice little script or just go off the cuff like I do and just talk and talk and talk and talk and say things that sound really smart. That's what scares me about this, is that people will take what I say. And while I can provide sources for a lot of the stuff that I say, and I have been educated on a lot, and I try not to talk about things that I'm not educated on, or haven't done a lot of reading on, my words carry weight, because I have a platform. I try and use that platform as best I can, but I do have a platform. So anybody with a platform has their ideas spread, for good or for ill. This is why deplatforming happens, because as places like YouTube and Spotify and Twitch and Facebook and Twitter and all these other places, as they are private entities, they are entities that are owned by private companies or conglomerates, and you sign a terms of service, terms of use, you are not subject to the protections of the law when it comes to the actions that you take on these sites. They have the power to unilaterally delete your accounts, to stop your stuff from spreading, because they are a private entity. You're allowed to say the things you're allowed to say if you're standing in a public place on a soapbox and nobody complains and nobody hits you. But you say it on Twitter, Twitter can say, I don't like that, and remove it, or remove you. YouTube can suppress your views and your spread. They can delete your channel. They can do whatever they want because they're YouTube, because they're a private entity. They're not the American government. They're not the Canadian government. So YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, to bring this all the way back around to the recent discussions around Donald Trump, they have the ability to influence what voices are heard, what is said, what can be said, what discussions can be had, because they are private platforms that people voluntarily sign up for and agree to use as per the guidelines set out by these private entities, who are able to, on a whim, basically, change what the standards are. So the problem with having these controls is that having these things happen is that it really becomes the platform itself that drives the narrative, because they can control who gets to speak and who gets to say what and what gets spread. They could stop right now. Like, they, I believe Facebook's started tagging Donald Trump's posts with, you know, whether it's fake news or not, and with sources to correct information or different information from what he's saying. So they have the ability, you know, I would say, to do good, but also to do for ill. You know, what's stopping, Jack from Twitter has done a good job of allowing things and for trying to steer Twitter in a particular direction where hate speech is not allowed and where problematic ideas are challenged. He came from the early internet where, you know, it's the Wild Wild West where people have to protect themselves and they have to protect each other, and it's really kind of an anarchist system, to now one that's very regulated. These platforms define who gets to say what, so they themselves become the arbiters of discourse. There's nothing stopping a platform from saying, no ideas about, let's say, you cannot talk about baseball on this platform. That is well within their right. They can control and make a baseball-free haven somewhere. They can make a sports-free haven. If Twitter wanted to really badly, they could say, no more sports on this platform, and then it would just work. That's how it would work. That's how it would happen. They have the ability to define what is said and what is talked about. They get to define, and through defining what is said and what is discussed, they can define reality itself. I'm not saying objective reality, I'm saying subjective reality. Then we're getting into kind of a postmodernist discussion of multiple competing realities. Everybody's reality is distinct from one another's, and because of the experiences we all undergo, we live life and experience the world around us slightly differently from one another, which I do agree with. But there are objective certainties to reality and objective constants to reality, like things physically exist in space. COVID-19 objectively exists, and you cannot say otherwise. The desk in front of me exists. And I'm rambling again. So this is why platforms are important. I've just sat here for, I'm closing in on 26 minutes and 15 seconds. I've been sitting here talking for almost half an hour, and you've been sitting there listening. Whoever's made it this far has been sitting there listening for 26 minutes, and the things that I've said have reached your ears, and you can turn around and tell somebody about that. I could sit here and talk about literally anything. That's the point of this show, is to literally allow me to talk about anything, because it's my show, and it's stuff that I want to talk about, and it's important. I talked about movies a few weeks ago, but I also have a responsibility. Because of those two little letters after my name, because of the fact that I get half an hour on the radio every week and a spot in the Spotify catalog, my words mean something. Something that was said that is still written on the whiteboard in my old office when I worked at a newspaper. Words mean things. You can't just say anything. You can't just print anything because words mean things. They confer meaning. They define how people think and what people think. And they define reality. You can't call somebody a racist just because you want to. Because then people might believe it. And that might ruin that person's life. Just like you can't call a Nazi a good person because then people might think that Nazis are good people. So, this is goes a long way to say we need to use our platforms properly. That's why when the Black Lives Matter protests kicked off again, I took a step back. I didn't want to join the conversation because I felt like I needed to let other people talk. That's why I played Martin Luther King and I didn't talk, because I'm not going to add anything of value, and I feel like I'm going to detract from the conversation. So for me and people like me, we need to use our platforms respectfully and properly and know the power that we wield. We are educating millions, and we've got to be respectful of that. All right, so that was the episode of Let's Talk About, another new episode. I'm going to try and keep these coming as much as I can. A lot of things have been going on, so I'm trying to keep busy in life and with this. So I'm going to have a little bit more time this week, probably going to record another episode. But thank you very, very much for listening. I've been Jason, you've been the audience. Thank you very much, and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day.